Warning, the following audio transmission is based on theory and is intended for entertainment purposes only. It's Doomsday and its affiliates will not be held liable for anything your dumbass does. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome, everybody, to It's Doomsday Podcast. Today is January 5th, 2024. Time is 4:05. This is our last interview from the Hive Life Conference 2024 in Sevierville, Tennessee. And sitting down with me today is Stephen and Claire, which are urban beekeepers. You guys have to explain that.
Well, we'll start. Well, we're urban, and we do have hives out in the country, too. So we actually get kind of the experience of both. It's kind of nice. I mean, from hives on the rooftop of a grocery store to hives out in the middle of the fields and on a distillery in the middle of the country in Leaper's Fork. So we get the best of both worlds and the worst of both worlds, I would say.
So you're out putting hives on top of like different buildings, grocery stores, things like this.
Yes.
Are you worried about Bezos at all?
Bezos?
Yeah. I've heard through the grapevine he's buying up Roof Space Realty and making that a commodity.
I mean, we train our bees to keep those kind of guys off there. So
I'm just thinking the whole drones landing on the beehives, right?
Yeah.
You know, that could be bad.
It could be. I don't think they hate drones.
Do they?
Bees do, yes.
Okay.
You ever seen someone fly a drone around a beehive?
No, I have not.
Because it just chops them all up.
Well, I've never seen a bee fly after a drone either.
Oh, they do. They chase them.
Do they?
Yeah. They don't like the noise, the high pitch frequencies.
Okay.
They do not like it, and of the, you know, the blade spinning. So
you guys,
you'll hear bees going pop 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 pop.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, I thought I was gonna get a really cool film, you know, of our bees and our hives with my drone. I was getting all artistic, and then I just started seeing bees fly everywhere and chopping. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have to do this by hand.
That was probably the worst experience of their life.
It's very sad.
So you guys are here in Tennessee.
Yes.
So obviously nice for you guys to be able to attend this event in state, mm-hmm. right? How long have the two of you been beekeeping?
I'd say actual beekeeping, close to 5 years now. We started out though just more research and development before we really got deep into actually doing stuff, because we were just into learning mm-hmm. more about it. We weren't kind of the people that went, I'm going to get 10 hives and hopefully they work, you know? So we're a little more obsessive about the science and the nerdy side of that stuff. And then, started out with a hive and grew from there. So
yeah, I've thought about beekeeping and I kind of gravitated toward Jay and he kind of scared me away from it. So I don't know if this is going to be something I'm eventually going to do or not now.
Those old beekeepers will do that. When they've been in a while, they will tell you, your bees are going to die.
Yeah. I've heard that so many times this trip.
It's very morbid.
It is. So 5 years beekeeping, I've asked everybody this question.
Mm-hmm.
What is that one mistake you've made beekeeping that you can't get out of your head, that you're still kicking yourself for to this day? What was that mistake? Because everybody's made one.
I can answer that because I think about it every day.
Okay, I got to hear it.
And you can correct me if I explain what I did wrong, because I'm still just, I just feel so bad. But Steven's normally the one that works all the hives, and I'm usually there just as his assistant. But as far as like pulling out frames and stuff, I do it, but I just feel like he is more hands-on and I'm more of his assistant, keeping things organized, bringing him whatever he needs.
We have a system. She can do everything too, but you gotta have a system when you're doing it, so.
But when you have so many different clients' properties that you're working, you know, Steven's also a full-time artist, so I was like, we need to divide and conquer. So then going through our backyard hives, or the hives on our property, I was like, I don't even want you there. I'm just going to be the only one there so I can not have you breathing down my neck. And so I'm pulling the frames out. I find the queen. I clip her. I set her aside on top of a metal roof, and it's hot out. And it was only for like seriously 30 seconds. But then I go to let her back in and she's just dead in the clip. So then I let her out and I go to show Steven and I'm like, I think I just killed the queen. And I clipped her and set her aside so I wouldn't squish her. And he was like, well, yeah, it's really hot out. You probably just scorched her. So the way he described it made me feel very bad. And then I saw her kind of moving, so I thought maybe she fainted.
Which does happen.
I've heard of that happening, but I hadn't experienced it. So then I put her back in the hive to see if maybe she'd come back to life, but she just rolled down the frame and definitely did not come back to life.
She didn't make it.
So you say you think about this almost every day, and you also mentioned you use the word queen every day. Is there a correlation here? Is there a connection?
She's a queen.
Yeah, from one queen to another, I'm sorry that I killed her. I mean, that's like the one thing you don't want to do as a beekeeper. I know a lot of commercial beekeepers are used to killing queens and re-queening, but for me it's very hard to do just because, I don't know, I look at them and I can like, I just feel like I have a personal relationship with every bee that I encounter.
What was it that one of our mentors a long time ago said, Claire, if it makes you feel any better about killing a queen, it takes much less time for a queen to be made and hatched than it does a regular worker bee. And even longer for a drone. So, you know, technically the drones are, you know, it takes longer to make them, those male bees.
Male bees.
So you don't want to kill the male bees.
But no, like in the realm of that mistake, that's something I would never think of, that you could overheat the bee or, you know, kill the bee in that way. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah. He said it was probably the sun. I don't really know for sure, but I definitely, you feel bad when you know that it was your fault. So, but that's also how you learn. You're never going to learn anything if you don't make mistakes. So
if I
let him work the hive all the time, I'm going to know stuff from watching him, but I'm not going to have the experience of moving the frames around comfortably and being able to navigate a queen. So queens are going to die and queens are going to be born.
Yes.
So next question is, what is that one super amazing thing you learned about the bees where you're like, oh my God, I had no idea, it blew your mind, and that's like the coolest thing ever? Because I've had a lot of those moments this weekend.
I bet. God, they're so fascinating to me on so many levels. I think that's where like everything started. I mean, I used to just be obsessed with honey and the tasting notes of honey and all the different medicinal properties of it and the health benefits. And so that was one of the fascinating things. I mean, the fact that one bee only makes what is this, like a teaspoon of honey in their lifetime, basically. I mean, I always thought that was a big appreciation for every time I took a spoon of honey and put it in my coffee. You know, it was almost like, wow, to think that little animal took their whole lifetime to make
just
a little
bug.
Just to
make something you're drinking in 10 minutes.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was more, there's so many facts that are fascinating, obviously, that you can go crazy on, but I think it was more for me as a collective, just all the amazing things that you learn through it and how much you appreciate honey in general and bees in general for our environment. And so, yeah.
I think the most fascinating thing is the way that the bees communicate. One of the best books that I've read is Tom Seeley's Honeybee Democracy, because he talks about like the mathematical equations and how they communicate to find their new home when they swarm. And so, and they do this to communicate about nectar and pollen as well. And I'm sure that you've probably already heard this, but scout bees will go out and then they'll come back and they'll communicate. You know, they measure the space and then they will angle their butt in a certain direction and they'll flap their wings a certain amount of times per milliseconds. And it will basically tell the other bees, like, where is the spot that they found? And then the scout bees will all figure out which one that they're going to go to. And that's how they know the direction. And it's actually like a mathematical equation that Tom Seeley breaks down in his book, Honeybee Democracy.
That's wild. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, so that's like something else that just blew my mind. And you got to think the bees, how much trust they have to have in each other to be like, follow his butt. That's where we're going.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
It's wild.
Right. That angle.
It's that angle.
I mean, Tom did follow it, and that's how he figured this out. So it's a really great read. But then something else we've found out that was pretty fascinating was, you know, that yellow jackets can completely kill a hive. And even if it's condensed and everything, you know, yellow jackets were really bad this year. And
well, the timing of when that happened was also very interesting, and in how they killed the hive. And like the fact that the spacing of our hive, this particular one, was, you know, we hadn't completely condensed it down yet. So, but it still was getting colder at night. So the yellow jackets will fly at times that the bees won't. A little bit colder temperatures, more windy conditions. So as the bees go up at like towards the evening and start to cluster, that's when yellow jackets will come in and just start taking out wax and eating into the hive, and they're not going to break their cluster.
They'll also take each bee and rip off their head and start eating the bees for animal.
Yeah, they're carnivores.
Because they're carnivorous.
Whoa.
So, like, we were 2 days too late to this one particular hive. Like, we were planning on going 2 days prior to condense it, and then we ended up, you know, when you have multiple yards, you don't always get to them at the perfect time, and we got there 2 days too late, basically. And so
we went on a yellow jacket killing spree and felt like superheroes, you know, squishing as many as you can in a bee suit. You're not afraid of them.
Yeah.
So how many hives do you guys have?
We run about on average 50. It ranges because, you know, you'll lose a little bit in the winter, and during spring we go up a lot. So we like to say roughly we like to keep ourselves around 50 hives, and we manage those hives on different properties with companies. So our whole story is these companies are these boutique places like the distillery who makes their own, Leaper's Fork Distilleries, who we're partnering with. They make their own bourbon from grain to glass, as they're saying. So they grow everything and they make their own bourbon. It's taken, obviously, they're all bottled in bond. It's taken 4 years now. They're 7 years old now. Yeah. But they're starting to get all their good product in now. It's starting to come. So that's kind of our mentality, is staying small but powerful with what we do and telling the story with the bees. So I built these artistic, really cool hives on whiskey barrels on the front of their property when you pull in to go to the distillery. And the hive rooftops have copper gabled roofs. They're real pretty. And so our whole story with them is obviously grain to glass and from hive to glass too. So we'll use that in some of their products and do different things with the honey from their property as the grains from the property too. So just a really cool stories is what's important to us, and telling these small stories but powerful stories in communities to keep that together, rather than thinking that we should try to scale and mass farm bees and, you know, spread everywhere and just do as much as possible in volume. We took the route of more the quality over the quantity. And that, I think, is something really important that you have to choose when you get into this whole world. You have to know your route. If you're going quantity, then you're not going to be able to, not saying you can't do quality, but you're not going to be able to tell such an acute story of each little place. So it's just a completely different concept and model of what we do.
But right, and the one thing that I keep picking up on, well, I guess it depends on who I've been talking to, but the level of involvement dictates the better outcome. So it seems like the more involved you are, the more knowledge you're gaining, the better outcomes you're gonna be, unless you're overly involved because of lack of knowledge. Then you're just out there wrecking shop, not doing anything constructive.
Right.
Well, we do have we do have a growing field where sometimes we just throw bees into that. They're definitely not neglected, but we go to them last because we take care of all of our clients' bees first. And it's funny, sometimes the hives that you get to last or you go into the least amount are the ones that are doing the best. So it's definitely a beautiful balance of not going in there too much, but still going in there enough to be able to manage the hive and make sure, you know, that there aren't Yellow Jackets taking it over. So it's kind of just overseeing everything and assisting where it needs to be assisted, but not being there too much and stressing them out.
Yeah, the metaphor I like to use is, you know, you're like a, you're kind of like a governor of all these little cities, right? Like
you are their god.
You're their god in a way. So you're going in and you're trying to assist them in their city to function better. But if you go in and try to over-govern a city, then it just goes into uproar, right? It doesn't work.
Yeah, you're just
or if you don't
it.
Govern it enough, it also doesn't work. So it's that happy balance of understanding how much you need to go in. Or same with a, you know, well, I won't even say that because we'll stick on the city thing. But I use that metaphor a lot when people don't understand bees a lot and what we do. So I just like to say, you know, yeah, we just govern a bunch of little cities and make sure that they're doing everything they're supposed to and that they're healthy, happy, and functioning well. So, yeah.
So advice for new beekeepers.
Advice for new beekeepers. Do you want to start?
I think the most important thing is to join your every county has their own bee organization and every city has their own bee organization. So you should find the one that's closest to you and you should go to their meetings, even if you're not ready to have hives yet, and just go listen to the talks, educate yourself, meet other people that are interested, even if you don't want to get hives for a few years. Then when you are ready, you have the resources and the people that you know where to get started. But also when you're there, find the people, the personalities that you resonate with, and talk to them. Ask them if you can go into their bee field with them. Let them become one of your mentors, and don't choose
That's
just one mentor. Choose
that.
Multiple mentors, because you're going to learn so much from every beekeeper that you talk to, and then you can take the bits and pieces, put it together of the things that you learned, and decide what type of beekeeper you want to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think the mentor thing is a huge. We had three mentors, Jay being one of them, and that helped us a lot of all the just hearing the perspectives. And I would say, as a new beekeeper, don't go out and just get a hive. You know, it's almost like that whole method of school. Like you don't you go to college, you do your bookwork, you learn how to do, you know, the science or the math, whatever it is. And then you go out and do an internship and then you go and learn it in the field on the hands-on stuff before you actually going in, you know, doing surgery or whatever it might be as a practice and a trade. So I think do not go out and just start thinking you're going to get a hive and it's going to work. I mean, it might, but you're also not. There's so many things that can go wrong, not just within your hive, but spreading diseases and things through the, you know, with not understanding how things properly work.
Right. So. I mean, it seems like from the outside looking in, it seems like it could be very intimidating.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody I talk to here that seems like they're into it, they're like, oh, no, it's extremely common, therapeutic, and it's great.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm like, it must be once you have retained all the knowledge and you know what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean.
I think you can just go out and get a, I mean, it depends. If you like the adrenaline rush and lack of being prepared, like that's a whole nother
Who enjoys that?
I guess this one. I think it's kind of fun to just throw a swarm trap up and then see if you catch bees and then go
and then call
there.
Three mentors and say, what the hell do I do?
But honestly, like we did have, actually it's four, I think. We did have that resource to be able to call, but we also had the resource to be able to go to our beekeeping meeting and be like, hey, like, how do we do this? How do we do that? Mm-hmm. Can you come over and show us? And then from that, it becomes addicting and you just go from one hive to 50 like that because you're like, this is amazing. Like we play with bees for a living and do art.
Yeah. And I think like anything, you'll go through phases too. There were times where I was spending with one of my mentors where I felt very comfortable with my hives after years. I could go through things quick. I knew how to, you know, spot something wrong with it. And I was looking at a frame with him and I was like, looks pretty good. Everything's looking decent. And he was asking me, he goes, you see something else though? And I said, not really. I've looked around, haven't seen anything. And he said, look at that bee right there. And it was one bee. And he goes, look at that one, another one. And we spotted what's called K-wing on them. I had not even experienced seeing that. I've seen it in pictures. I've seen it everything. But I wasn't right there looking at it all the time. And that was a while ago. And that was when it hit me. I was like, you're always learning in every practice that you're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I never go into any hive thinking, oh, I know everything. I can figure out anything in this hive, you know? And 5 more years from now, probably look back on today and be like, oh my God, I thought I knew everything then too. You know, so you're always learning in the practice of it, which is really cool. Cause it just gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and the thirst for knowledge is really awesome. So
yeah.
Can I tell you his most embarrassing beekeeping?
No.
Experience?
Yes, please. Absolutely. I'm all for it.
There's so many.
There's video of it, and I'm totally.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, are you guys on social media?
Yes.
Okay. So tag me in it when you post that embarrassing story.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the great. It is a great one. Like I'm kind of glad it happened now. When it happened, I was not too happy about it.
So our favorite thing to do now is actually to catch swarms. For in the beginning, you know, I've loved honey my entire life. My grandmother made biscuits. I always put honey on it. We both always were fascinated with bees, and so we got into it for our fascination of bees and honey. But now I will say I love catching swarms the most. But that
she doesn't even care about the honey anymore.
But that was the most intimidating thing to do the very first time. And you know, our first client was the organic grocery store. All of a sudden, they call and there is a swarm, but it was a fully absconded hive. Like it was the biggest swarm to date that we've had to encounter.
It was one of those swarms the size of a car.
And it was in the tree right at the entrance to the grocery store. So, but we had not actually caught a swarm wild yet. We had only like had it explained to us. And so
I knew how to do it. I knew every single detail. We studied it like crazy. But again, like I said, if you haven't been hands-on or you haven't heard something happen in a mistake of beekeepers catching swarms, I would have known something like this, but you know,
so
you gotta be out there and have it happen.
The swarm's high up. At this point, we don't have buckets or anything made. We don't have like our system of catching swarms. We're just winging it. He backs in his truck. He puts the ladder on the truck. He climbs up the tree. The grocery store is shut down. Nobody can go in or out. So the people inside are stuck inside. The people outside can't go inside. We've locked everything off. So we have to do this quickly. And Steven's, you know, this branch is massive, full of bees, and I know that he needs help holding it, but he wants me to get footage, and he wants it in slow-mo. So I'm sitting there, and I'm like,
request for slow-mo, because if anything goes right or wrong, it's going to be awesome.
Right,
but,
exactly.
But we can't really discuss it, because everyone's watching us, and the people outside can hear us. And so
it was
I'm
under
like,
a time crunch. So
are you
we had
sure
to
you don't want help putting that branch? And he's like, no, I want the footage. And I go, okay. Well, inside the grocery store, the window is lined with people, all with their phones out. Steven goes,
everybody's taking slow-mo,
everyone's
dude.
Everyone's taking videos. Steven yeah. goes to cut the branch. It's way too heavy. It goes this. And
that's
the bees
happened.
Just roll no. all the way down him.
That's not what happened.
You
it
had
wasn't that it was
no
no.
All the way down.
Let me correct. What really happened? Because I was there.
I was there too.
So I had the big clippers to get the branch down. So I had my left hand on the branch. My whole goal was to just hug my body like that and clip the branch, and then lower it down into my truck. So
into
when
the box.
I in yeah into the box in the truck. So when I did that, the branch was pretty big, and I had it almost all the way clipped. And when I pulled it, that last little bit snapped the branch and made it kind of pop. Well, that pop showered me in just 6 feet long of bees. And I didn't have a proper suit on, so I had them down my back. I had them everywhere.
Yeah, he just had a veil on.
Yeah, but
and if
it
he
was
would have had both hands on the branch and I clipped the branch,
would've
then it would have been fine.
But we have slow-mo footage of, you know, what would we call that? What does Kent call those? The beekeeping accidents?
I don't
I can't
know
remember
what
his
Kent
name for
specifically
it.
Calls it, but I do know that you wouldn't allow me to post it, and I think enough years have gone by now that I can actually post it as one of your like
yeah.
funny beekeeping things.
I think it would be good now to post. And the finish to the story though, which is really cool, that we finish on a good note with it. It wasn't just a total wreck of a swarm catch. I did end up finding the queen on my 1960 Ford truck on the green. She landed somehow on the top of the truck, and I screamed at Claire. I'm like, I got her. I found the queen. So I clip her. We ended up getting the entire hive. And that hive, 2 years later, is still sitting on the rooftop and has produced a bunch of honey on the rooftop of the grocery store. So
nice.
That's kind of the reward and the fun of it all. You
right,
know?
Yeah.
Like you get
you
to see
a nice
stuff
shower
like that.
And bees, and yep. You got a
I took a bee shower, and you know, now I'm sharing the honey from it. So
all right. So one of my missions with everybody here that I've interviewed so far, I want everybody to try this. So this is Spartan bee bread.
Okay.
So you guys can each take one of these.
Wait,
I want you guys.
I just know this is company
no, it's not my company. It's okay. Not my company.
I mean, I want
honest reactions out of you guys with it.
Okay. Do you want us to even like know anything about it or just go for it?
Can it's bee bread.
Because I'm obsessed with looking at.
Yeah, you go ahead. Yeah, here. Take a look.
Okay. So we've got bee bread, black currants, sea buckthorn, apples, and cinnamon. It doesn't sound like it would be... selling be pretty good.
Nowadays, they say there's something about bees in it, and there's really nothing at all.
Well, no, what I want to know, because I want to know from Spartan Bee Bread, I want to know how they're getting the bee bread.
So they say process. It's coming from, yeah, there's a video on their website.
Oh, cool.
You can go back and you can check out their whole process. It's a family-owned and operated company.
Because bee bread
must be a big family, because they're producing a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and how they're extracting it out of the cells. I mean, when bee bread's in a cell, you're talking, you know, this much, one per. So I'm curious.
And that's what makes it so interesting to see actual beekeepers try this.
Yeah.
Smells like bee bread, but I mean, It's funny because I have an aversion to, like, I don't really like eating raw pollen, so I probably won't like this. But
it's okay, just honest opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You ate the like, whole thing at once?
Yeah, I did.
I eat three of these a day.
It definitely doesn't have honey in it. Definitely bee bread.
And it tastes like pollen.
It does. It tastes like... Definitely got a lot of pollen in it.
Does it give you a lot of energy when you try it? It must if you eat three a day.
So, I was explaining a little bit at dinner last night about this weird diet I'm on. With that diet, I'm losing out on a lot of vitamins and a lot of omegas because there's so many dietary restrictions. I wanted something that could fill in the blanks, and I didn't want a multivitamin from, you know, like...
China.
Yeah, exactly. Best way to say it. So this kind of filled in all those blanks. I was taking it for about a week and a half, and I started getting kind of like boundless energy. Like, didn't want to sit still. Not like caffeine energy, like, you know, shaky.
Right.
But wanted to get up, wanted to walk around, wanted to do stuff. Didn't just want to sit there, wanted to keep going.
Yeah.
After 2 weeks, that leveled off. And then what was really interesting that happened was extreme mental clarity. I'm forming sentences better. I'm speaking more clearly. I'm using more correct words in sentences. I could talk better smack to my coworkers because now I'm faster than they are. Right.
That's cool.
I like taking it in small bites because I don't have as much of an aversion to it as I do just eating a spoonful of pollen, which sounds weird as a beekeeper that I don't really like that. But this, I'd probably buy this product and keep trying it.
Yeah, like that little apple cinnamon finish kind of levels it off so it's not so bready. But no, I mean, it almost, when you said vitamin, it almost, I mean, obviously there's so many nutrients in bee bread. I mean, look at, you have your omegas in it, you have...
What's crazy is they don't even have the minerals that are in there on the package because there is so many. So if you go to their website, packed full of nutrients and minerals. It's so dense of a nutritional food that you could eat.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Low calorie, low sugar, low carb. It's like one of the perfect things. So I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And no, I mean, it'd be nice. I'm not here to promote it. I'm here to get people's reactions.
No, it's totally, I mean, as like you said, vitamin-wise, I would rather go with that rather than just
something coated in plastic,
pill,
and
whatever the hell it is. Yeah, no.
You want as minimal amount of ingredients as possible, so everything looks kosher on that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you guys like it.
I am.
Right? Everybody's given me a little bit different of a reaction. My favorite one I got so far is one guy, he ate it and he was like, wow, this tastes like I was working with the bees all day.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So, social media, do you want people to find you guys, not find you guys? You want to talk about the business, how they could like get stuff with that online, or because now's the time to plug it before we're out of here.
We're totally love for people to follow our journey and what we're doing. We're doing some cool stuff this year with our partnerships and would love to share them all. They're totally unique and wild stuff that we're doing with partnered with these companies with our honey. So really cool process videos we'll be showing and some cool film stuff. So yeah, they want to follow our journey with everything. It's a Greenwood Honey Co.
Greenwood Honey Co.
Straight there, no hyphens, no nothing.
And what social media is that on?
That's on Instagram.
On Instagram. I'm going to have to give you guys a follow on there because now I'm curious about tracking the journey of what you guys are doing. And I want to see these hives you're making too.
Yeah,
because as soon as you like said artistic hive, it kind of caught me like, well, what does that mean? And then you were talking about the copper roofs and I was like, oh, that's good. Yeah. I want to see those now.
Well, I think that's something that we haven't really talked about at all is like Steven's comes from a family of artists and he's a full-time
artist and beekeeper.
he's a full-time amazing artist. He has a lot of major clients. He has art all over the United States. And so one of the things that we wanted to do was combine the two things that we love. We both come from creative backgrounds. I still kind of work in the film industry doing I used to work in movies and episodics. And so we've taken our talents creatively and we've created our company. And so we take Steven's artwork, his oil paintings, and we put them on our honey bottles and we rotate the artwork for each apiary location.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Then we use the color on the top of the bottle goes with the painting on the front, and each color represents a different location. So Steven really, you know, is constantly thinking of ways that he can be creative. He's constantly collaborating with companies that we both believe in, and he comes from a health background, a training background, and so we're partnered with an organic grocery store, Turnip Truck in Nashville. We're partnered with Patina Home and Garden, where, you know, he built these beautiful hives on there that have cedar shake roofs.
To match her, she has an old cabin that they redid on the property from, 1800s or something?
Yeah.
And so we kind of try to, the whole goal is to match the aesthetic of the places that the hives are going. So they kind of flow with the land. Like the distillery, like I said, I cut these whiskey barrels in half, wrapped them in the bands in copper, and they're burnt charred, you know, hives that look like the inside of a whiskey barrel. So each place that these bees are tells a story with the company that they're with. It's not just a, you know, oh yeah, we have bees on our property. Well, that's cool. Why? Well, let's tell a story with this, because I think humans are storytellers and we like to sit around a campfire and play songs and tell stories. So
I have no idea what that's like.
and most people buy our honey, you know, as gifts for people because the bottles are so beautiful. But then I find that a lot of people aren't opening the bottle because they don't want to mess up the packaging.
Oh, yeah, because it's like a keepsake kind of
thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, you have to eat the honey. You
gotta
can
eat the
turn
honey.
The bottle into like a flower vase or something after.
We'll
but
make
you have
another
to eat
one.
The honey.
Yeah.
But the people who do eat the honey, they love it. They come back for more. One of our things is, you know, really viewing honey as a delicacy. And when we extract our honey, we extract it hive by hive. We name each hive and we write the name on the back of the bottle. So that way, when you're tasting our honey, the honey, we let you taste from each hive and then you taste the difference, all the differences. And people are blown away that the hives are right next to each other, but taste different. And it's like, you know, the bees aren't all foraging on the same exact stuff, the same exact ratios. They're actually, you know, flying in a one going this way, one going
couple
this
mile
way,
radius and finding all kinds of different things.
Each
hive's communicating with each other to where they found their source.
Right.
They're going to be mixed up. Yeah, you might get some of the same things in some of them, but they're still going to taste uniquely different.
You know, and it really got me thinking today because somebody else brought this up is, you know, when you get the commercialized honey, it's mixed. It could be cut with something, et cetera,
blended, whatever.
Right, so if it's blended from all these different hives, you're not getting those unique flavor profiles.
Exactly.
So that's like, man, that's something they've been holding out on us for years.
Yeah.
But also, it's why our honey sells out so fast, because each hive only has a limited amount. So if we're blending from all of our
hives. Could be 100 bottles.
They've already tasted our honey, but now people go and they're like, wow, it's a beautiful gift. And I want to taste from all five of these hives. So they'll buy all five bottles because they want to try all five.
Now, do you sell it through Instagram? Like, if I would want to go buy some honey, where do I go buy it?
You could write us on Instagram, and at that time, we'll let you know where it's available. You know, it's seasonally available, of course, because we only have around 50 hives. But we sell the honey from Patina Meadow at Patina Home and Garden in Leaper's Fork. We sell the honey from Leaper's Fork Distillery's property at their gift shop at the distillery. And then turnip truck straight from the roof into their grocery store. And then we have, like, our private hives that we sell basically through Instagram if you write us.
Awesome.
And I will say too, on the note of doing it hive by hive, it is very, I should say, in case there's any other beekeepers listening, we know it's extremely inefficient, and many would say that is ridiculously stupid to do. But like we told you, there's so many different business models and what you want to do with bees, and for us, it meant more to take this route of telling a story. That's why we have to cap ourselves at a certain amount of hives, and we have a whole different route we take with it. So we're not going to obviously have 1,200 hives and be able to harvest hive by hive. There's no way. We wouldn't even be able to do it with 300 hives. It would be too much. So that to us is...
takes way longer.
Takes longer. But, you know, it's just different market, different people, different stories. And to us, we're so passionate about the flavor notes of bourbon, of honey, of all these flowers and the things that we love of smells and tastes and sound, all of our senses, including that. So for us, it means a lot that honey is obviously treasured as this unique piece of gold, liquid gold, that we can showcase all the different types and talk about it. Because if we only had all these blended honeys all the time, how do you talk about it? You're just like, yeah, it tastes like honey. I mean, I have memories as a kid of what I thought honey tasted like. And really, I probably was eating some corn syrup stuff from overseas crap that I still, to this day, I mean, anyone can think of a time that they had a McDonald's honey packet.
I was just thinking in my head, McDonald's honey.
That is what I thought honey tasted like. And that's what I think most people just expect it to taste like, because we've had so much bad honey in our lifetime that we don't even realize, like, what is it, like 80% of it is imported?
Yeah.
And so,
and adulterated.
Which is why we have such a strong passion for taking people through a journey of, like, you have not tried honey, actually. Like, well, maybe you have, but here's a more, again, acute style of getting to experience it. Hive by hive, here's the name of it. Get to know your bees and your emotional side to the product, where you have our customers have relationships almost with the hives. Like, they talk to us and say, hey, how is Dahlia doing? Is that hive doing well still? Are we going to get more honey off Dahlia? I really like the honey they did last year. And we're like, well, it's not going to taste the same this year, but yes, Dahlia is still doing great.
Yeah, people start to create relationships with those hives. Mm-hmm. But you should definitely, you know, stay in touch, because we have some really cool products that we're not able to talk about right now that will be coming out next year. And, you know, it's not anything that we've really seen done in this way. So,
Yeah. It's
a lot of things coming up that we'd love for you to try.
And you guys are going to be back here next year, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
okay. It's definitely on my radar to get back here next year. I'm really going to try to.
Okay.
So, and then we'll bring some of those products for you to try.
There you go.
At the table. Yeah. We're going to get your opinion on how
I'm excited to have a honey from, like, Melinda or some hive.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, who's Melinda?
I don't know. But I'm going to name one Melinda now so I can bring it back to you.
That could be your hive.
Well, guys, thanks for coming on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Thank you
for having us.
This is an emergency action message. At approximately 1 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, NORA is tracking 15 ICBM nuclear missiles inbound to the following cities: Orlando, Miami, Pittsburgh, Dover, Newark, Richland, Philadelphia, New York City, Baltimore, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Boston, Seattle, Detroit. This is an extremely deadly situation. Stay tuned, the next emergency message will be a presidential address.